Only He can save you. He can save you. As the song says, He can save you now. Be good to get that taken care of. All right, we're going to look at another instance in our series In Step with Jesus. And I'm going to admit to you, I already told you that for the most part, tonight is almost going to sound a little bit more like the Striving Together series. In fact, we're not going to be looking so much exactly what Jesus did, even though, of course, it all revolves around what the ministry and what Jesus did here for this individual, this group of people. But I specifically want to look at a group of people that were used in a great way. And so let's go ahead and take our Bibles, and let me give you the parallel passages. There's three: Matthew, Mark, and Luke. We're going to be looking, going to see which one is mostly. I think mostly we're going to be looking in Mark, but really we're going to be looking in all of them. So why don't we go ahead and just start with Matthew. Let's go to Matthew chapter 9. Matthew chapter 9. And let's read Matthew's account. And then we'll go forward into Mark and Luke's rendition. So Matthew chapter 9, and we're just going to be looking in just the first couple verses of Matthew chapter 9. The topic is the paralytic man that was born of four. Do you remember that story? Probably a lot of you do. Let's go ahead and read it. And again, each one, Matthew's going to share very little. I want you to pick up on the parallels, those things that are the same, maybe a few things that are different, and we'll capitalize on some of these differences that are available, okay? Here we have another point that we see of Jesus' life as he travels around with four of his disciples, although his disciples are not necessarily mentioned in these passages. Here we're going to see Jesus travel around, and we'll see in one of them that it of where it is. I think it's Mark that tells us where he was at this time. So let's jump into Matthew chapter 9. And although in your Bible it might show eight verses, kind of a part of this story, we're going to just focus on the first two. Okay, so Matthew chapter 9, let's just look at verses 1 and 2. And he entered into a ship and passed over and came into his own city. And behold, they brought to him a man sick of the palsy, lying on a bed. And Jesus, seeing their faith, said unto the sick of the palsy, Son, be of good cheer, thy sins be forgiven thee. And then right away, Matthew goes into the situation with the scribes and the Pharisees and the antagonism that comes here. And we might look at that here in another 2 weeks. I don't know yet, but certainly I just want to focus on this paralytic individual, this man that had a need. Okay, so you got what Matthew said, right? Just two verses there. Matthew is straight and short and to the point. Let's go to Mark. Let's go to Mark chapter 2. Mark chapter 2. And here we're going to get five verses from Mark's perspective. Five verses from Mark's perspective. Mark is going to be the one that tells us where. In Matthew, we read that he entered into a ship, passed over. What do you think he's passing over? The Sea of Galilee, right? He's in this area of Galilee, so he gets into a ship and he passes over. Says into his own city. Well, what's that? Mark chapter 2, verse 1. And again, he entered into a ship, into Capernaum after some days, and it was noised that he was in the house. Okay, so where did he get in the ship and go to? Capernaum. Okay, so he goes to Capernaum. This is North Sea of Galilee area where he spent much of his time. And straightway many were gathered together, insomuch that there was no room to receive them. No, not so much as about the door. And he preached the word unto them. And they came unto him, bringing one sick of the palsy, which was born of four. And when they could not come nigh unto him for the press, they uncovered the roof where he was, and when they had broken it up, they let down the bed wherein the sick of the palsy lay. And when Jesus saw their faith, he said to the sick of the palsy, Son, thy sins be forgiven thee. And then that's where Mark goes into the situation with the scribes and the Pharisees there. So we have five verses. Mark tells us a little bit more in those five verses of what's going on with this individual. Okay, now let's go to Luke. Let's see, Luke chapter 5. Luke chapter 5, and we're going to look at verses 17 through 20. 17 through 20, which at that point, again, the scribes and the Pharisees were addressed. So we're just going to go through the first part. Luke chapter 5, verse 17, and it came to pass on a certain day, as he was teaching, that there were Pharisees and doctors of the law sitting by, which were come out of every town of Galilee and Judea and Jerusalem, and the power of the Lord was present to heal them. And behold, men brought in a bed a man which was taken with a palsy, and they sought means to bring him in and to lay him before him. And when they could not find by what way they might bring him in because of the multitude, they went upon the housetop and let him down through the tiling with his couch into the midst before Jesus. And when he saw their faith, he said unto him, Man, thy sins are forgiven thee. All right, is there any doubt in your minds that this is the same story? It's the same story, right? Okay, it's the same story. But do each one give a few different details? Yeah, it's just, you know, it's the same story. But you can see, Mark tells us where it was at. Luke tells us what the crowd was like. Some interesting things that I want you to notice and see. Here in Capernaum, and you remember, Capernaum at the top of the Sea of Galilee. And if I could put in quotes, an important meeting with Pharisees and doctors of the law from Galilee, Judea, and Jerusalem. Now you just think about that little statement that Luke makes. Is this an important meeting, it seems like? You know, and I'm not sure, saying this was a called meeting, you know, did Jesus call all these people? Well, I don't know, but it sure seemed to develop into an important meeting, if we could put it that way. Because there's a lot of, from the worldly perspective, a lot of important people gathered here. Now, what do we also know that Jesus is doing? What do these passages say about Jesus and his ministry? What is he there for? He's preaching, okay? He's preaching. Now, he ends up healing a man, doesn't he? But what was his main ministry here? He was preaching to these people. He was letting them know the truth. And so that's what Jesus is doing, although there's a multitude of people around. All right. But I want you to notice these. Now, there's four men. One of the passages, that was Mark, he tells us born of four. Okay, the other passages just kind of say they did this. But we know from Mark that there were four individuals that carried this. One says bed, one says couch. So whatever this place where this man was lying because he was sick, he was not feeling well, he needed some physical help. We see also that he needed some spiritual help because Jesus forgave his sins. But I want you to see a couple things that is mentioned here. Typically right now we're looking at what Jesus did, and that's where we normally are, but tonight I told you it's going to be a little bit different. I want to look at these four and their faith of what they did in the story that we find Jesus. First of all, I want you to understand their faith led them to, number one, see a real need. See a real need. You know, this is the time of an important meeting. You know, and these four men obviously were concerned enough for their friend. Now, what do you read in this passage that tells you that these men were very concerned about their friend? Go ahead and speak to me. How do you know they were concerned? It doesn't say these men were concerned about their friend. It doesn't say that. But how do you draw that conclusion?
They did whatever.
Did you read? I mean, did you follow along what they did? Now, we're going to come back to this in another point. But when you look at Mark's rendition, Mark gives us the most detail with this. Notice verse 4. Just think about this. When they could not come nigh unto him for the press, they uncovered the roof where he was, and when they had broken it up, they let down the bed wherein the sick of the palsy lay. Now, does this sound like just a little thing? Does it sound like there was a natural opening in the roof for people to be let down? No, it doesn't. It sounds like the roof was made just like most of our roofs. There's a place, and they calculated where Jesus was because they looked in and said, listen, we got to get this man down there. And so they took off, you know, again, I don't know if they had shingles. I don't know what they had. I don't know what they had for the roof, but it says that they took off the tiling. That's Luke's wording. They took all this. Mark says they broke it up. Okay, again, it doesn't look like they went up. They crawled up the stairs to the natural, you know, hatch that was up there and opened, you know, the latch on the door and just opened it up and let them down. No, these guys went up there and they got their whatever, their hands or their hammers or crowbars or whatever they took, and they broke it all up and they removed all that tiling. They went into the roof material. You know, did they have to cut it with something? Yeah, they broke it up and let them that down. I want to tell you something. When we look at this, these men were very, they were very concerned about their friend. They were very concerned. They saw a real need. This was the important thing in life. I want you to think about the important things in life. The important things of life. What's important? What is important to you? You know, a lot of people have different things that are important to them. And I want you to think about these four men. Do we know what was important to them? Not. It doesn't give us an all-inclusive report of what was important to these men. But what do we know? What was important? They got their friend to Jesus, right? Is that safe to conclude? I think it is. I think we can see this was important to them. I don't think these men would have went to all the trouble. Well, what could have these men said to their friend? Let's just wait a little bit, right? I mean, Jesus is an important meeting. Did you see who's gathered in that meeting? I mean, where were the people from that were in this, again, I say loosely, meeting? Where were these people from?
Jerusalem.
Well, there's an important place, right? Judea. What's significant about Judea? Well, I would say it was just a long ways away. Okay? And then, of course, leaders around Galilee. We know that some of these people were called Pharisees. Again, you know, obviously these men that were coming down, or actually I should say up, in both ways, in elevation and in you know, north, south, east, and west, as they went up, they wanted to do something. Now, we're going to see here that probably they were up to not much good. But Jesus had them gathered there preaching. Now, these four men could have said, listen, friend, this is not a good time. Let's just wait. What other excuse did they have? So it was an important meeting. What else? We read it in this passage. There was no way in, right? It was blocked. It was full. There was no way. They got to the door, and there's no way to get to Jesus. He's way inside there. I don't know how big the house was, but they couldn't get in. There was no way, you know, to push through the crowd. You know what I think? It must have been an impossibility, because it seems like it would have been easier to push through the crowd than to go up on top of the roof. What do you think? I mean, to me, the roof seems like it would have been a last resort. So I can't tell you exactly what the crowd looks like, but obviously these four men said, there's no way into this place. We're going to have to go up there. We're going to have to go on top. Any other thoughts of why we can see that this, you know, of what these men could have said? You know, Jesus is busy. Certainly he's not going to be concerned about one when he's dealing with all these people. They could have said a number of things, but they didn't. In fact, what they did is they said, we've got to get this guy inside. Now, I think, again, we can safely conclude that this was very important for these four to get this man up. This man needed to see Jesus. Now, you think about that. In our series of striving together for the faith of the gospel, what was important? What was important? See, a lot of times in our lives, we let important things get in the way of bringing somebody to Christ. A lot of times we let things get in the way of our ministry and some of the things that we talked about this morning in attendance or being serious and pitching in and being around so that we can see the most important thing in life. What does the Bible say about the most important things in life? We find some passages that talk about seeking those things which are above, right? Isn't that what God instructs us to deem as important? The things which are above. Of course, those are the things of God. Matthew tells us in chapter 6, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness above the things like housing and food and clothing. The Bible teaches us to honor and glorify God in all that we do and say, whether therefore you eat or drink or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God. For thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive honor and glory and power. For thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are and were created. Honor and glory of God. I think the scriptures also teach the importance of others. People needs. People needs. Seek others. Philippians chapter 2, in the first couple of verses, tell us to look not on your own things, but also on the things of others. That's the perspective that we're supposed to have. That's supposed to be important, okay? So God's supposed to be important. His kingdom is supposed to be important. Meeting the needs of other people is supposed to be important. Honoring and glorifying God needs to be important. What is important to you? A lot of times for us, it's our entertainments, our jobs, our money, our schedules, our possessions, our properties. You think about the church in Acts. Now, I understand you say, Pastor, we're living in a different age, and we are. We're living in a different day. But what could you say about the people in Acts as they began to form that church? What would you say? Could I ask a simple question? Was the church important to these people? How do you know? How do you know? Go ahead. What evidence do we have that shows us that this was important? They were selling things. I mean, now that's a big deal. That's a big deal.
They met daily.
These people met daily. They met daily. Can you imagine if I got up here tonight and declared, we're going to start meeting every day for church? Pastor, come on. You're pushing it a little too far, right? Why did the people meet daily? Did God give them a command to meet every day? It's not recorded if it is. You think these people were a little bit serious about God? They gave money. I mean, they sold their possessions. You got Barnabas selling land to help provide needs. What else do we find the people doing? Getting together and fellowshipping, eating together. What else do we find them doing? Many times. Praying together. And these people thought it necessary. Peter's in prison. What do? Did they put out a prayer request to the secretary to put on the prayer chain? Now, I don't say that that's a waste of time. I think that's good. But seriously, I want you to think about it. What did they do when somebody in the church had a need? They got serious about it. They went and they prayed. They went and they helped each other out. You know what I was telling my kids when we were leaving? My neighbor in back of us. Many of you have heard me mention him, okay? And just the things that are going on in his life have tried to be a blessing and encouragement to him. And, of course, I don't endorse, you know, him doing it on Sunday today. There were people all over the place right behind our house. And it looks like he either, I don't know if he had a friend that got it, or he rented one of these big scissor lifts or something like that. He had a tree. You could see him doing it. And they were taking down a big tree. Obviously, it was a problem tree that he wanted down. And you know, they showed up. When we were leaving this morning, I saw vehicles starting to come in. And I say vehicles. I saw one, but I thought, no, that's a little bit odd that one's going in there. Till we got home from church this afternoon, there was multiple vehicles. And right before we left for church tonight to come to church, there were still all kinds of vehicles. But the one thing I noticed was when I got home this morning from church, or this afternoon when I got home from church, I noticed that they were working really hard on this big old tree. And there was stuff all over the place, but there were people all over the place doing little jobs. Till we got in the vehicle tonight to come to church, it appeared that the group had got all the work done. It looked like there was no mess. The tree was all taken care of, and they're back in the back, you know, having a little get-together. And I told my kids, I said, you know what? That is so interesting. You've got a group of unsaved people that see a need, and they all show up, and they pitch together. Can you imagine having a big... I want to tell you, if you've never had a big tree taken down at your house, it's a bigger deal than what you think. Right, Skip? It's a big deal. I know it because I've had several happen at my house. Bill's been over there helping out with trees. You know what? You look at the tree, and you're like, you know what? We'll cut that puppy down, and boy, it will be easy. I want to tell you something. We cut those trees down, and all of a sudden, you realize there's a boatload of work. All those nice little branches that are up there, they just get numerous. It's almost like they multiply as soon as they hit the ground. You know? And it's like, what in the world? You get your chainsaw out and you cut and you cut and you cut and you cut and you cut. And it's just, it seems to be getting bigger and bigger. You know, until the end, you have so much work. You know, and I watched them and it was all done. Gone. It looked like there was never a tree there. And I told my kids, you know what is amazing? Sometimes the unsaved world proves us foolish. Somebody has a need. What do we do with that need? I want to tell you something. What is important? You know what? To those unsaved people, and I say unsaved loosely, I don't know them. Good chance. But you know what? They are practicing something that I want to preach to you that I say, you know what? And these men were doing. We've got to get to the point to where we see people's needs and we're there ready to help pitch in. Let me ask you a question. Do you think it was a big blessing to my neighbor that those people showed up this morning and till this afternoon they're having a picnic in back and the tree's gone? What do you think? Wouldn't you like that, Skip? I mean, can you imagine? I know you like the work and all that stuff, and that's another thing. But just think about that. A big task. You know what? One individual might work on it for days, weeks. And you've got a group of people that show up and the job is eliminated within 2/3 of a day. You see, I would say that those friends, relatives, neighbors, whoever they were, there was something important to them. And they made sure that they did what they thought was important. Boy, we want to get over here and help our friend. We want to help our dad or whoever he was to them. I'm going to tell you something. That spoke to me when I saw that. We need to be people that are willing to pitch in and help each other. Again, what's important? What is important to you? Again, the church in Acts, super important. They were there. I don't know. When I picture Acts, I picture a group of people all week long. You say, Pastor, we can't do that today. I understand, but I think that we are on the other side of the pendulum. I think that we operate by ourselves very much. Not like this. Not together. Not getting work done. We need to get serious about the super important things in life. And I want to tell you, I believe it's super important helping each other live in the issues of our lives. I think that's important. That's God's word. I mean, you think about it. You know, these men right here, they thought it was important to get this sick man to Jesus. Did they have in mind his sin? I don't know. But I think they had in mind his paralysis, his physical need. And they pitched in, and Jesus not only healed the physical need, but he healed the spiritual need as well. I can't say that enough to you. We need to be more concerned about physical needs and probably seeing Jesus meet spiritual needs on top of that. What's important to you? Preacher, I don't have time to help other people. I have enough stuff going on in my own life. We all do. You know what? If we all use that excuse, nobody would ever help anybody else. Because don't we all have all kinds of needs? We're all backed up. We all have to-do lists that are like, you know, a couple of weeks or years or months, whatever, behind. We need to pitch in. But these people, they saw the importance. I want to see, second of all, that their faith led them to get out of their comfort zone. Again, I encourage you to think of the makeup of the meeting. Think of these men. I don't know who these four were. The scriptures don't teach us. I don't know about this paralytic man. We don't know what influence. Was he an important person? Was he a scribe or a Pharisee? I don't know, but I doubt it. Now, you think about this comfort zone. Now, the normal human walking up there and seeing this important meeting go on, you know, it'd be intimidating, I would think. We can't go in there. This is too important for us. Their reputation would be at stake, their image, the disruption, the future. You know, if I go in as a nobody and I go in with all these bigwig people here, there's no way. I'm going to be ruined for life. They'll never accept me. They'll never think of me as anything. But you know, they had an important task to do. And no matter what the cost, they were willing to put their necks out, as it were, to get the job done. Willing to sacrifice to get the job done. You know, a lot of times we are intimidated, we get scared to get out of our comfort zone and do something that we don't like to do. Ministries come up all the time and we think, boy, that's not for me. I can't, you know, do that. That's out of my league. That's out of my zone. You know, I can't tell this person about Jesus. They look scary. I don't know. I can't do that. You know what? These men were willing to deny their image, their future, the potential, their reputation, because it was important, and do something that was out of their comfort zone. You know, as a group of people, as the body of Christ, individual body parts, as we talked about this morning, you know, sometimes we need to get out of our own comfort zone and help out that neighboring muscle that needs help because he's weak. Get out and do something just a little bit different to support. You know, so I don't even know that person that sits over there in a church. I don't know their name. And you know what? Get out of your comfort zone and be a blessing and help. Find a way to be a blessing. I want you to see the third thing that their faith led them to, and that was to spend great effort to get the job done. Now, we've already looked at that. Mark chapter 2 and verse 4 gives us the greatest description and what they did. When they could not come nigh into him for the press, they uncovered the roof where he was, and when they had broken it up, they let down the bed wherein the sick of the palsy lay. Luke chapter 5 and verse 19 says, and when they could not find by what way they might bring him in because of the multitude, they went up to the housetop and let him down through the tiling. Obviously, they had to remove that, which with his couch into the midst before Jesus. You know, striving together ministry takes a lot of effort. I want you to think about that. Striving together ministry takes a lot of effort. I want you to think just for a moment. Imagine yourself in the book of Acts. You're part of that first church. Right away, we look at a lot of the benefits and blessings. What are some of the benefits? Again, I know you've already mentioned. What are some of the benefits of what was going on in Acts? What about partnership? What do you think? Another blessing? To be a part of that partnership? What about the blessing knowing that if you had a need, your friends and your brothers and sisters were going to be there to help? Wouldn't that be a blessing? If you knew that, I think it would be. I'm not getting much response. I think it would be a great blessing to know that when I had a need, people were going to be there. And I know when my neighbor had a need, then I would be over there, just all helping each other. Have you ever had somebody show up at your house and help out? It's a blessing, okay? It's a blessing to have people that care about you. You know, there were a lot of benefits. To know that your friends and relatives and neighbors and the people part of your church would be praying no matter what when you got thrown into prison. Well, that was a blessing. It's also a blessing to always have that fellowship and camaraderie that they could have. You know, after the service, they got together in an after-church fellowship and brought their brown bags. No, I'm just kidding. But they did, and they got together and they ate together. I want to tell you something. There's a sense of blessing. Why? Because they were in a community of other brothers and sisters that cared about their needs. They cared about them. They cared about them. But I want to tell you something. Yes, we look at all the blessings and benefits, but it does take a lot of work. Can you imagine? If we acted that way, and this week, you know, you think, a storm's coming up. Not only am I going to have to take care of my issues, I'm going to have to go meet other people's needs. You know what? That takes sacrifice. We're all busy. To get over there and help somebody else would be a great sacrifice. You know, to give of your own possessions, you say, I've worked hard for this. But to give to somebody else, the money that I've earned to help somebody else with a need, you know, it just takes great sacrifice. It takes a lot of work to strive together, that type of ministry. You know what? It's not easy. It's not easy doing it. It takes sacrifice. You know, their faith led them to sacrifice. These men, what they did was very difficult. They had to expose their reputation. They had to, I'm sure that they were a scene. Can you imagine dropping into this house? Scribes and Pharisees, Jesus looking up, who are these people? They didn't care because it was important to them that their friend's need was met. I'll tell you, if I could say striving together ministry, I think of Born of Four. Wow. They're doing whatever it takes to benefit who? The whole. Their brothers, their sisters. But I want you to see finally their faith led them to work together to help a brother. Working together. Mark chapter 2 says they were born of four. Obviously, the conclusion is these four men got together. Now, I shared this on a Wednesday night months ago. But born of four. You know what? I don't know. One word was couch. Another word was bed. But obviously, there were probably four corners to this thing. And they got on the four corners, and they together got up. Now, if you've ever lifted somebody up on a stretcher or something like that with four corners, it takes a little bit of teamwork, doesn't it? You know what? One person can't just get his... If you ever worked with somebody that just kind of... They were like the Westward Ho kind of guy. Let's get it and let's go, you know? And you got somebody over here that's a little bit slower, and they're trying to keep up and do all this. I'll tell you what, to do things together, teamwork takes teamwork, if I could put it that way. You get somebody that's going to just rush into the matter, it's going to topple over, it's going to spill. It took four men. You know what happened if there would have only been three? Could they have done it? Well, they might have been able to do it, but I tell you what, with four corners, it would be nice to have four people. You know how it is to have three corners on the floor? You know, you're putting a table down or something like that. And what happens when you got three corners that are there and one corner's not? What can you do? It goes back and forth. I don't know about you, but I don't like that. Okay? I don't like things that wobble back and forth. It's not stable. You can't do your work. You know, you get something down in your kitchen, you get a new stove, and you put it down there, and you make sure that those little adjustments there are right and level and everything's right, because you don't want to be sitting there cooking something on the thing and the stove's going like this. You can't get the work done right. You know, you get it nice and stable there. It takes those four corners, and sometimes it's just two, and it wobbles a different way. You know, and we can laugh at this illustration, but do you see that? It's important that there are four stable corners that are there, and they're in teamwork. They're working together. Now, you think about this. I don't think that these men got into an elevator. And they took this man on a couch or a bed up onto the roof. Did you ever really think about that task? That's a task. I wouldn't like to be the one on the bed. You know, if you say, Pastor, let's try it out and see what it works like. I wouldn't want to be the one on the bed. Okay? You know, four guys are going to say, Pastor, we're going to lift you up. We're going to act this out tonight. You know, when we go out, we're going to lift you on the roof of this church. And you're Pastor, you're the one to go on the couch. I'm going to run, okay? Because I don't know that I trust you to do that. But let me ask you a question. Did it take teamwork to think through this? To get this guy staying on his bed. Now remember, this is not just some pastor volunteering himself to stay on the bed. No, this is a paralytic man. He's a paralyzed man. All the more dangerous. This guy had to be stable. Folks, I want to tell you, teamwork is super important. Teamwork is important. Born of four, working together, learning to work together. They obviously had to talk about things, plan things, make sure that their plan would work. And it took all four of them. You know what? It takes teamwork. I've asked you to imagine three. What about two? What would have been like if there would have only been two guys, two friends? As the number goes down, what goes up? The work, the danger, the difficulty. Question, what if there were only one? What if there were only one? One person to do a difficult task. What do you think? Would that be tough? Before we close, I want you to look at an interesting passage. It's found in Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Solomon goes back and forth with the things in life that seem to be great accomplishments. In the end, he deems as vanity. One of the things that Solomon of all people, who is very wealthy and has a lot of possessions, recognizes that an individual man that endeavors to go through life on his own and try to accumulate wealth on his own is going to end up in vanity. And the point of the passage is to prove the vanity of one man working to get his wealth. But there's an interesting concept that's given here in Ecclesiastes chapter 4 that's not just this idea of the vanity of gaining wealth, but it's an individual trying to do something on his own. And I want you to see the principle. I'm going to read it nice and slow. Keep in mind what we're talking about here with teamwork. Born of four. The task, the difficult task of a group of four men to get this one man to Jesus. Or three men. Or two men. Or one man. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, I'm going to start in verse 8. Within the context, is talking about this one individual that is trying to get wealth on his own. Don't just get hung up on the wealth part, but look at what he gives with the numbers. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. There is one alone, and there is not a second. Yea, he hath neither child nor brother, yet is there no end of all his labor. Neither is his eye satisfied with riches. Neither saith he, for whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good? Solomon's conclusion. This is all vanity. This is also vanity. Yea, it is a sore travail. So there you just see the opposite side of one man. Now again, I understand this one man is working for riches. But it is one man on his own. He doesn't have a brother. He doesn't have anybody else. He's working. But notice what he says in verse 9. Obviously, there's more to the passage than just wealth. Because he says in verse 9, two are better than one. Because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. Again, if two lie together, then they have heat. But how can one be warm alone? And if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him. And a threefold cord is not quickly broken. I want to conclude with one statement. God's plan is teamwork. Do you catch that? God's plan to accomplish his work is teamwork. Father, would you help us? Would you help us to see that this is not a one-man deal? This is not a one-group deal. There's no way that that one man could do the job of getting this man to Jesus. It took a whole group of people to do the job. God, would you help us to see the need? That we all would, you know, come here and see what's important in life. God, would you help us that we, as we see what's important, that we would be willing to sacrifice and give up of our own selves. It takes a lot of hard work. God, would we be willing to get out of our comfort zone to do what is important? God, would you help us to work together to help each other? God, I thank you for the four that you provided this friend that had a need. Lord, would you help us to have more than one, two, even three, four, more people. people that are willing to help out. For there's a lot at stake, the faith of the gospel. And it's so amazing that we see this individual coming to faith as his sins were forgiven. There was a lot at stake for these four. God, thank you for these four men. Lord, I pray that you would use us together, striving together for the faith of the gospel. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.